Today is Tuesday, June 12th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. U.S. President Donald Trump met with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un in Singapore.
So we're signing a very important document, a pretty comprehensive document.
VOA interviewed the president following the summit. What were the outcomes of that meeting? How does it compare to other agreements with North Korea? And how did South Korea react? Plus, what some say is the future of transportation. It's all ahead on today's International Edition. In an agreement signed Tuesday in Singapore, North Korean leader Kim Jong-un reaffirmed his firm and unwavering commitment to complete denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula, while U.S. President Donald Trump committed to provide security guarantees to North Korea. VOA contributor Greta Van Susteren spoke with the president after the summit.
What surprised you today about Kim Jong-un?
Really, he's got a great personality. He's a, you know, funny guy. He's a very smart guy. He's a great negotiator. He loves his people. Not that I'm surprised by that, but he loves his people. And I think that we have the start of an amazing deal. We're going to denuke North Korea. It's going to start immediately. And a lot of other things are happening, including getting the remains back. You know, I know you've been so involved in so many ways in North Korea, but getting the remains back, Greta, is so important to so many people. They've called me, they've written me letters, please, can you do it? And he's agreed to do that. Thousands of people, who died in the war. So that's a big deal.
So you put the human rights issue on the table today, and he reacted how?
Very well. I mean, we obviously were talking about the denuclearization 90% of the time, but we put a lot of other things, including human rights were mentioned. Getting the remains back were a big factor. In fact, we put it in the document. We're able to get that in the document. We got a lot of good things in that document. That was far beyond what anyone thought was going to happen.
Give me some sort of behind the scenes. Did you issue an ultimatum to him? Did he issue an ultimatum to you? What was the reaction to back and forth?
Not an ultimatum. We've been dealing for 3 months, really, and we've been dealing through our various representatives, including Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, who's done a really fantastic job. So we've been dealing for a pretty good period of time, and when we met today, we got along right from the beginning. You know, for me, this is hour number 25. I haven't been sleeping for 25 hours. It's been a big, long negotiation, and I'm very proud of it. It starts a process, you know, that could have ended up in a war, that could have ended up with many millions of people. You know North Korea very well. Seoul has 28 million people. That could have ended up with millions of people dead, and we're going to end up with a deal.
All right, what about our troops? Are they staying in South Korea?
Yeah, they're going to stay. We didn't even discuss that. That wasn't discussed. We are going to get out of the war games that cost so much money. Because I think, number one, it's very provocative, and I want to do it, and I think they're very happy about it because it is so provocative. But it costs a fortune to do it, and we won't do that as long as we're negotiating in good faith.
What brought him to the table this time? Because, you know, there's been a lot of saber rattling back and forth over decades with the DPRK in the U.S.
Well, actually, I don't think there's been too much saber rattling prior to me. I don't think they basically had a silencio attitude, silence. They didn't want to talk about it, and you can't do that. And I think the initial rhetoric was very important, frankly, as much as I hated to do it and as much as some people thought I was doing the wrong thing. I think without that, we wouldn't be here. I also think that he really wants to make a deal. He wants to do something. Because he knows that we mean business. I don't think he felt that in the past. I think in the past it was different people. It didn't work out. But he knows that we want to do business. We have to do business, and we will do business. And now we do have, it's been, you know, not a long time, but although you could say that from day one we've been talking about North Korea and in a very tough manner. But I think we signed a document today which was far, far greater and more comprehensive than people thought. Nobody thought this was possible.
What do you think he thought of you after he left?
I think he liked me, and I like him, and I understand the past. And, you know, nobody has to tell me he's a rough guy. He has to be a rough guy, or he has been a rough person. But we got along very well. He's smart. Loves his people. He loves his country. He wants a lot of good things, and that's why he's doing this.
But he's starved them. He's been brutal to them. He still loves his people.
Look, he's doing what he's seen done. I mean, if you look at it, but I really have to go by today and by yesterday and by a couple of weeks ago, because that's really when this whole thing started. again, without the rhetoric and without the sanctions. The sanctions were very important. The sanctions are going to remain on until such time as we see, you know, this is going to happen. And we pretty much see that now, but the sanctions will remain on until we really start dismantling or dismantle the nuclear weapons.
Because this is Voice of America, it will be heard in North Korea by the citizens of DPRK of North Korea. What do you want to say directly to the citizens of North Korea?
Well, I think you have somebody that has a great feeling for them. He wants to do right by them, and we got along really well. We had a great chemistry. You understand how I feel about chemistry. It's very important. I mean, I know people where there is no chemistry. No matter what you do, it just don't have it. We had it right from the beginning. I talked about that. And I think great things are going to happen for North Korea.
Mr. President, nice to see you all the way from Washington.
That's true. It's been a long time. At some point, I'll be able to go to sleep, I think, you know, get a little rest.
Indeed. Have a safe trip back, sir. Thank you, sir.
It's a great honor. Thank you.
Thank you.
President Trump called the agreement signed with North Korea comprehensive.
So we're signing a very important document, a pretty comprehensive document, and we've had a really great term together, a great relationship. I'll be giving a news conference at 2:30, which is in a little bit less than 2 hours, and we'll discuss this at great length.
To learn more about that, I'm joined by VOA's Bill Gallo in Singapore. So, Bill, if we take a look at the summit between North Korean leader Kim Jong-un and U.S. President Donald Trump, what was the outcome of their meeting?
Well, that's sort of the million-dollar question. We know that the two men made history just by virtue of shaking hands. It's obviously the first time a sitting U.S. president and a North Korean leader have met. But what is the actual outcome? Donald Trump was very optimistic about this afterwards. But the actual joint statement that they released was very, very light on details. I think it was way shorter than had been anticipated. So we don't know what the outcome will be, though Trump is very optimistic.
Leading up to this summit, a lot of analysts were stressing that the devil was really going to be in the details. Was there a lot of detailed information that came out of this conference about how North Korea was going to denuclearize?
Well, no. The joint communique is all we got today. Trump did announce during the press conference afterwards that U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo would next week lead talks with U.S. and North Korean officials, but it's not clear what those talks would be about. As you mentioned, there had been lots of calls for greater details in this communique and as a result of this summit, but notably there was no mention of CVID, the complete, verifiable, irreversible denuclearization or dismantlement of North Korea's nuclear program. Actually, Trump was asked about that in the press conference afterwards. And very notably, he said the reason they didn't include that is because they didn't have time to include it in the written agreement. I don't know what that means. He was not asked a follow-up question on that, but it falls short of sort of what had been expected, I think, as a result.
What was the biggest takeaway or biggest announcement from that joint statement?
Well, I'd say the biggest, like, concrete takeaway was that Trump afterwards announced that he was freezing war games, U.S. military exercises with North Korea. And, you know, very interestingly, he called these war games too expensive, he called them inappropriate and provocative. But he told VOA contributor Greta Van Susteren that U.S. troop levels in Korea were not brought up. So the natural question is, if U.S. troops are going to remain in South Korea but they're not going to do war games, what are they going to do?
Bill, you brought up that Secretary of State Mike Pompeo was going to have talks next week to kind of iron out these details. What do we know about that process?
We know very little about that. No, as far as I know, we don't know what the next step will look like. We just know that there will be more talks. And, of course, Donald Trump suggested he's open to inviting Kim Jong-un to the White House.
VOA's Bill Gallo has been in Singapore for the summit. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much.
Here are other top stories from around the globe. The UN peacekeeping chief said the situation in Sudan's troubled Darfur region has changed radically for the better, and the United Nations and the African Union are recommending new sharp cuts to their joint security force. President Recep Tayyip Erdogan sees in the latest Turkish growth figures as a vindication of his economic policies in the face of skepticism from not only voters but international investors of the country's economic strength. The U.S.-led coalition in Syria and Iraq has ramped up its attack on the final remnants of Islamic State in increasing the number of strikes by more than 300% over March. For expanded coverage to these stories and more, visit our website, voanews.com, or download our mobile application to take the stories with you. This is International Edition.
This is Science in a Minute.
Astronomers have detected swirls of diamonds hundreds of thousands of times smaller than a grain of sand in the protoplanetary disks of three baby star systems in the Milky Way. After conducting a series of observations with the U.S. National Science Foundation's Green Bank Telescope in West Virginia and the Australia Telescope Compact Array in New South Wales, the astronomers identified these so-called nanodiamonds as the source of a faint and mysterious microwave glow that has baffled scientists for nearly 20 years. Called anomalous microwave emissions, the odd glow has been spotted in regions throughout the galaxy. The astronomers also found that infrared light coming from these three systems contained the distinctive signature of nanodiamonds. Scientists think the tiny diamonds were probably formed from the superheated vapor of carbon atoms. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. Stepping back to take a broader look at the agreement reached in Singapore between U.S. President Donald Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, I spoke via Skype to Lisa Collins. She's a fellow with the Korea Chair at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. I started off our conversation by asking Lisa what she took away from the summit.
So I think my first takeaway from the summit is that there were a lot of good optics that came along with the summit. President Trump and the North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, they met, they shook hands. It seemed like they had fairly good personal rapport. But I think when it came down to the substantive issues, there's a lot that is lacking, particularly when it comes to the joint statement that was signed and then announced. I think the substantive issues, particularly the issue of denuclearization, there's a lot lacking in the statement.
Yeah, well, that's one of the questions I have for you is leading up to this summit, right? There was one of the key issues, what really is denuclearization? And now we have the statement in the joint declaration that says of the peninsula. What do you infer that to mean?
So the 4 points that came out of the joint statement are fairly vague, and they're all points that have been previously agreed to in other negotiations, like the six-party talks and the 1994 agreed framework negotiations. They are things that North Korea has put on the table before, so it's not particularly anything new. What is problematic, I think, is that there wasn't really a discussion about verification or complete, irreversible, and verifiable dismantlement of North Korea's nuclear weapons program. I mean, there's vague language about complete denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula, but there's nothing about verification. And I think if there were previous negotiators who had worked on this, who had, you know, walked into these talks, they would have wanted to see something more concrete.
So if we take a look at the language in this statement and previous statements, like you said, it's a lot of the same vagueness, it's a lot of the same actual words.
Right.
Does that mean that this summit was a success, or is it just more of the same thing?
Some people would probably claim that it is successful in that the summit helped reduce tensions in the region. The build-up to the summit itself, the negotiations that happened, prevented North Korea from testing any more ballistic missiles, testing any more nuclear weapons. There's also the personal relationship factor that, you know, may produce fruit in the coming weeks. If President Trump and Kim Jong-un get along personally, there may be more political will to move forward with denuclearization in the future. Kim Jong-un is the ultimate decision maker in his country, so what he says goes, and if he decides he wants to follow through on a more serious process, then he may be able to do that. And then there's the interaction of Kim Jong-un, the leader, with other people around the world, which could indicate a slight opening of North Korea, but something that we'll have to wait and watch for in the coming weeks and months.
President Trump said that, at least for now, there's going to be a suspension of joint military drills in South Korea. And he used some language calling them war games, calling them provocative. And that is language that North Korea has used in the past to describe those activities. How should our regional allies view that?
Well, I think it's very problematic that President Trump has announced there is a suspension of U.S.-South Korea military exercises without any real concrete deliverables that have been given up by the North Koreans. It seems pretty obvious that he did not discuss this issue before it was announced with the South Koreans or the Japanese. This is an issue that involves a bilateral alliance, and it's not something that can be decided unilaterally just by the U.S. government. So I can imagine that there will be further discussions in Seoul and in Washington about what this means and whether or not this is truly a concession that they want to give up.
Lisa Collins is a fellow with the Korea Chair at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, joining us via Skype. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
South Koreans expressed joy and concern in response to the denuclearization agreement reached at the historic U.S.-North Korea summit in Singapore. VOA's Brian Patton reports from Seoul.
In Seoul Station, many commuters watched the Singapore summit as they waited for their trains. Some were overjoyed to see U.S. President Donald Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un agree to a denuclearization deal.
I am very happy because it is an epic breakthrough after 70 years of division.
Others were more skeptical about North Korea keeping its promises.
North Korea did not keep its promise in the past, even after signing the agreement. This is what I am disappointed and doubtful about.
The first ever meeting between a sitting U.S. president and a North Korean leader produced a broad declaration to work towards ridding the Korean Peninsula of nuclear weapons and developing a peace treaty to end long-standing hostilities between the United States and North Korea. Trump called the agreement very comprehensive, but it will be left to negotiators to later resolve differences between Washington's call for complete nuclear dismantlement before any sanctions relief and Pyongyang's demand that concessions be linked to incremental progress. Despite the lack of details in the agreement, some South Koreans offered President Trump praise for keeping the diplomatic momentum moving forward.
I think he's the president who can pull out an agreement all at once, unlike others in the past.
South Korean President Moon Jae-in also voiced support for the success of the summit to usher in a new era among the two Koreas and the United States. But Moon cautioned earlier that the process to end the North Korean nuclear threat may take 2 years or longer. Trump said progress will happen quickly to wind down the North's nuclear program that is estimated to include 20 to 60 nuclear warheads and thousands of ballistic missiles. Brian Patton, VOA News, Seoul.
This is International Edition.
Hello, I'm Douglas Simpuga, a host of Reporters Roundtable. Week on Reporters Roundtable, a discussion of Ethiopia's changing political landscape. That's Reporters Roundtable this Thursday at 17:30 UTC on VOA Africa.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, Ethiopian lawmakers have lifted the controversial state of emergency imposed across the country 3 months ago. We'll examine the most significant reform so far by the country's new Prime Minister, Abiy Ahmed, on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
From the Voice of America, this is International Edition. I'm Steve Miller. The Boring Company, based in California, is close to opening its first exciting venture, a 3.2-kilometer underground tunnel designed to convince Californians that traveling underground at a high speed may solve their state's ubiquitous traffic jams. It's the brainchild of Elon Musk, the U.S. billionaire who founded the electric car company Tesla and the rocket company SpaceX. VOA's George Pudich has more.
The future of transportation, at least in California, is arriving fast. Test cars are already zooming through a 3.2-kilometer tunnel the Boring Company dug under a Los Angeles suburb. In a few months, the public will be able to test it for free. But Elon Musk says this is not yet the Hyperloop.
Hyperloop would be where we draw a vacuum in the tunnel, have a pressurized pod, and go very fast. And this would be good for long distances, say going from LA to San Francisco, going from Washington, D.C. to New York, that kind of thing.
Musk hopes that this shorter tunnel will help convince the public that fast underground transport with access points no larger than a parking space will eliminate traffic jams on the surface and that it will be safe even during earthquakes.
Earthquakes are primarily a surface phenomenon. They're like waves on the ocean. And if you're in a tunnel, it's like being in a submarine in the ocean. It could be a hurricane on the surface, but in the submarine, everything is quiet and smooth.
Some Angelinos are enthusiastic about it.
Well, it's an amazing alternative for mass transportation in a city like Los Angeles.
Others are a bit skeptical.
Reality, I still am not convinced that this is going to work better than a subway or a bullet train or light rail or something that actually carries a lot of people.
The boring company hopes to soon start drilling a longer tunnel that will take passengers from Los Angeles to the city airport much faster than any surface transport. George Putich, VOA News.
And that is going to do it for us today. Patrice Martin directed today's program. Patrick Dia engineered the broadcast. But before I go, I'd like to thank you for spending part of your day with us. If you haven't yet, please follow the Voice of America on social media, where we post pictures, videos, stories, and more. You'll find us, of course, on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Have a terrific Tuesday.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In the wake of the United States' withdrawal from the Iran nuclear deal and the renewed imposition by the U.S. of nuclear-related sanctions on Iran, many companies are ending their business involvement with Iran because they do not want to run afoul of U.S. sanctions. In an address in Washington, U.S. Treasury Undersecretary for Terrorism and Financial Intelligence, Sigal Mandelker, warned, however, that it is often difficult for businesses and governments to even know they are dealing with Iran because of the regime's employment of subterfuge to finance itself and its long list of malign activities.
It uses forged documents to hide its participants and deceive legitimate private and public actors. It finds what it perceives to be weak links and exploits those links in the hopes that its activities will go undetected. It uses officials with influence and credentials to facilitate its illicit transactions. And all of this in support of nefarious activity, whether it's funding terrorists, supporting WMD proliferation, or exploiting its own people through corruption and human rights abuses.
Everyone must open their eyes to the true nature of the Iranian regime, Undersecretary Mandelker said. The reason why the U.S. has imposed sanctions on Iran is to thwart the regime's terrorist activity in the Middle East, its support for the murderous Assad regime in Syria, its development of ballistic missiles, and its rampant abuse of the Iranian people. Undersecretary Mandelker urged governments and banks around the world to be alert to Iran's deceptive practices. You must harden your financial networks, require your companies to do extra due diligence to keep them from being caught in Iran's deceptive web, and make clear the very significant risks of doing business with companies and persons in Iran. She declared, "We will hold those doing prohibited business in Iran to account." Addressing U.S. allies, Undersecretary Mandelker said, "We must work together to pressure Iran to make tangible, demonstrated, and sustained shifts in its policies." In the meantime, she added, "The United States will continue to shine a light on Iran's destructive activities and target Iran's efforts to deceive the international community, undermine the international financial system, and violate the laws of our allies and partners."
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.